This podcast is brought to you by sarahraven.com, which is home to everything you need for a truly beautiful and productive garden. You'll also find great and essential gardening kit and stylish, lovely things to have in your house to bring the outside indoors, all inspired by the garden and the house being tied together. There's also plenty of garden inspiration, how-to videos and specialist growing guides. So head over to sarahraven.com today to discover even more. Welcome to Grow Cookie to Range, the podcast of me, Sarah Raven, and lots of different horticultural friends. And today I'm joined by somebody who I've done two or three podcasts with, Arret Anderson, who I'm sure you will know is a garden designer and is on Gardener's World, but she'll tell us more about all of that in a minute. And I'm going to ask Henrik, to pronounce his surname because I can't.
No,
because
it's
Scandinavian.
Yeah, it is. It's Sjöman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So, and you spell that because none of you will know how to spell that. And you'll need to because you'll want to buy what we're going to talk about, which is an incredible book. You spell that S-J-O with those two dots on top, like little eyes. M-A-N.
That's it.
Anyway, the reason that I've asked them to come on today is that Arret started talking to me about this book that came out in the autumn, which is called The Essential Tree Selection Guide. And it's published, it's one of the sort of Kew Royal Botanic Garden books. And honestly, it's unbelievable body of work. And as I'm sure lots of you who will know if you listen to the podcast, I'm quite a tome deliverer. I'm a bit of a workaholic. And this is the most extraordinary book, which makes any other sort of source book on trees look like a paperback, look like a Mills and Boone, actually, because it's just unbelievably clear, but also honest about the complexity of trees. And we will come on to all of that, but I just felt completely inspired as soon as this tome arrived that I had to get them to come and chat to all of us about it. So can we start, first of all, hearing about you both separately and then how you met and how this whole incredible project came about?
Well, thank you, Sarah, for such a really wonderful intro to the book. And I hope as we go through, people will appreciate it as much as your good self. But so yes, I'm a garden designer. I write. As you mentioned, I'm very fortunate to be on Gardener's World presentation and also on the other shows as well. But I think that having come into the industry, which we'll now be getting on for 12 years because we've just crossed into a new year, that I kind of realised that how am I going to find my place within in an industry that has got such a huge amount of subject matter and such a huge amount of experience already there? How could I help and add to the party? And I guess that's the bit I've been trying to find with myself. I wouldn't ever be able to now call upon 30 plus years of experience because unfortunately I joined the party too late. But what I have found is that I'm inquisitive, I'm very passionate about our industry, and I just want people to understand as many of the components that make up gardens, garden design, plants, all of that world. If I can be somebody that can help with the communication of it, that's the bit I'm finding, I guess, to be a little bit of a thing I love and a bit of a niche. So, yeah, I wouldn't say that I have one hat that I do all. I'm too Virgo and too inquisitive, and I like to do many hats. And that's a bit about, yeah, how I operate, I guess.
And also, just before we hear from Henrik, the thing you're also really passionate about is sustainability. And that's why, of course, as we will come on to hear about, this is a perfect partnership in that, you know, trees are the thing that if we can plant more, whether in rural or urban or our own domestic spaces, they are unbelievably enriching in all ways. So, and because sustainability is I feel so core to your being in horticulture, Arret, it makes sense that this is the tome that you've devoted the last section of your life to creating.
Oh, yes. Well, I think, again, yes, a lot of that obviously is the the time and space that we're in, clearly, with the amount of impact that's happening in the world. And I think that, again, maybe because of coming to this that bit later in my life, it made me realise that when you're trying to learn about a new subject and want to operate in a new, you know, a space, it's kind of the question now is, well, how do I know if I'm doing more harm than good? And that's really been my raison d'etre, because genuinely I'm like, but how do I know? And that's what started a lot of that inquiry, because being literally a novice gardener when I first got my garden, and I did textbook. So I got the Miracle-Gro, sorry if I'm naming names, or, you know, I got all of those bug sprays and I just did what I thought was supposed to happen. And then, of course, with your own inquiry, you realise, well, actually, why am I doing that? And then, of course, when you inquire a bit more, oh, that actually causes harm. So it might make the garden look good. And that's what's been really important, Sarah, is I think that I've learned more and more over time about it's not about just how things look. It is about the function of things. And also, obviously, now what's added into the party is, and what can be done to help even further. And yeah, so I think that's kind of where that drive of sustainability and environmental consciousness, I guess, comes from is that I think gardens can be a smokescreen for everything being good. Yeah, as well you know. Mm.
So over to you, Henrik. So you're a plant scientist and a plantsman. So will you tell us all your about your as much as you can bear about your background and then how you got involved with Arit and then the book?
Yeah, sure. My background is that I needed money when I was 9 years old. So I asked a job at as a garden center, as a nursery. And I worked for 10 years as in garden center in a nursery. So I've been trying to selling plants, trying to convince people to why you should buy that one and so on. So then I moved on to garden school, to the university, and then even into research. But I'm still this salesperson in order to try to convince people why you should have that particular tree, that. And I get frustrated when you see that they're forcing stuff into a situation where you're definitely sure this will never, ever work and so on. So my background is I'm a salesperson still. I try to convince the people in a different way. So in my research, I'm a very applied to see the research question is very applied to try to find to get the question from the industry and so on. So that's my background when it comes to why I'm have this kind of glasses when I look at plants. And now I not only working at the university I've been working there for 20 years.
Which university?
Oh yeah, Swedish Agriculture University in outside Malmö in southern Sweden. But I also work as a scientific curator at Gothenburg Botanic Garden, and I also work as an honorary research associate at Kew Garden. So what I do in all these three places is more or less the same thing, to develop knowledge and guidance of tree and shrubs and plant use for site and functions and climate change and so on. So that's my focus.
So moving on to the book, I mean, it is just, I mean, we're trying to plant an orchard here at the moment, and it's so true, the thing, because really, I'm very ashamed to tell everybody this, but we actually planted an orchard here when we first came. It was one of the first things we did, and we put in 30 trees and 6 survived in the end. And it's because we hadn't got this book. Because, maybe we'll come on to that next, which is about right tree, right place. And I love the fact that, you know, in a small garden, it's really clear. You just say, okay, you can have Amelanchier, you can have Eleagnus or whatever. Or for a big garden, you can go for a massive magnolia or whatever it is. But it's like there is the right appropriate tree. And you can't just go to a garden center, think, there's a tree, let's buy it, it looks nice, plonk it in. It's like we need to know what and how they do and how they grow.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like when you, this is provoked me very much in a way, because when you buy a car, for example, you take your time to read about the engine. Mm. Can I get Bluetooth? How many gears? How fast it goes? How many seats? And so on. You actually do your homework. But when you buy plants, like height, autumn colors, flowers, done. Oh, expensive. Okay, we buy that one instead then. we need to be similar thoroughly when we buy plants as well, to ask ourselves, what do I want from these plants? What kind of equipment does the plant needs to have in order to grow well there, performing well, but also giving shade or wind barrier or whatever. That's the thing I want to, through this book, to change the way we talk about selecting trees in this case.
That is exactly what I saw and was really ignited about when I saw Henrik at a talk. We were both at a talk for one of the garden design associations, and I was hosting it, and Henrik was a speaker. And it was just this whole sort of deep dive into these trees that just really, really woke me up. And I felt like I was in the tree, or I was a leaf one minute, and then I was down at the root system, and, you know, really felt like this whole think like a tree sort of vibe was quite exciting. And to your point, Sarah, earlier, was really quite new and refreshing, and I hadn't seen that elsewhere. And that really made me think, wow, what have I done so far today? I've done height, spread, and season of interest, which is not a criticism because that's the only language that I had. Yeah. Mm.
And so how do you, I want to come on to the whole ecosystem thing in much greater detail in a minute, but how do you imagine people using the book? So, you know, say I'm choosing my apple tree or trees, you know, maybe I want 15, it was my 60th birthday from my husband, but we've got it on hold at the moment because the book arrived, so I want to get it right. But how do you advise using it to really get the best out of your selections?
So one of the things, as Henrik was saying, it is about, first of all, starting to ask yourself some questions around what you need, which sometimes when we are in a nursery or at a garden centre, we're much more emotionally driven by what we see at times. If we haven't done that level of planning and question asking, we'll just go with what we see. So one of the things that, you know, when we're chatting, and Henrik will always say, first of all, what do you want? So for you, Sarah, in this instance, what do I want? Well, I want an orchard. I want to have lots of fruit production. I want that to be producing for as long as it can throughout the whole season, etc. You know, the first thing is like, what do I really need? You might, again, start to ask, well, I also want to be able to go and sit down there. So I need to know that I've got levels of shade, and I want to make sure there's provision for me, but also for wildlife that will be around there. So I think it's just pushing ourselves to ask a bit more around what do we need? And that sounds very human-centric and very kind of anthropogenic, etc. But at the same time, if we're not understanding our need, then it'll be very difficult to go out and choose the right tree. So that's kind of the first thing. And Henrik, you jump in and tell me off if I'm wrong at any section.
No, go for it.
But then after that, it's a case of, right, well, so now I need to understand about trees. And I've got my list of requirements and the ecosystem services of what a tree can provide. So for those listeners who don't know what ecosystem services are, that's what the natural world can give into the environment for free. These are services that a tree, a plant, an ocean, you know, any of the ecosystems provide into our world. And we as humans, we get lucky because we can obviously play around with those. We can create ecosystems. But really, it's about the services that are provided for us. And what the first section of the book is about is to enable people to understand the services of what these trees can offer, because that will invoke some of the questions that you may not have thought about. So one of the ones is cultural ecosystem services, yeah, for example. So that's very much about, well, what placemaking do I want to make with this tree? I might, there's one thing just to, like you say, plonk a load of trees in. But if we go back to thinking about the tree that was cut down, help me out here, my brain.
The sycamore.
Thank you. The sycamore gap. So that's a classic example that culturally that tree had so much affinity for people. And when it cut down, and I've not seen that tree, and now I won't, there was a real emotional pull to it. So there's almost like because if I'm coming to your orchard, Sarah, because I can imagine how it will be, I will come there not only just to look at the detail of those trees, but I know that the choices that you make, the layout that you make, will all of a sudden will be very placemaking for future generations. That's just one aspect of it. Henrik, obviously, if you want to talk about the other ecosystem services as well.
No, go for it.
Well, we've also got provisioning is another one. What do trees provide in terms of, so they're providing timber for us, they're providing, you know, fruit and edibles for us, they're providing shade for us, all of these things. And the book goes into the detail of the provisional ecosystem services, the cultural ecosystem services, the supporting ecosystem services, and the fourth one, Henrik,
is regulating.
Regulating.
Yeah. Henrik, will you pick up these second two? So the supporting, or perhaps the first of all, the most important, are the supporting ecosystem services, and then the fourth one.
Yeah, sure. But the supporting is very much up how the trees and vegetation creates environments so we can live on this planet, everything to produce oxygen to breathe, but also how they create habitats for other plants and animals to live and thrive, everything from habitat to nest to food for pollen and so on. So that's the most important, because if we fail there, we are failing as a society and everything. And the regulating ecosystems ecosystem services are more the engineer-ish type of ecosystem service. They can help us to mitigate heat, cold wind. They can filtering air and thereby take up pollution particles. They can help us to reduce effects of floodings and so on. So these are most technical. So when you take a step back and look at the history of ecosystem services, when we start to argue, like Law Olmsted, when he designing the Central Park, they talk about a lot about the regulating ecosystem service by fresh air and so on. So that's the easiest way, was in the beginning anyway, in order to argue why trees are important. Then the supporting, provisioning and cultural ecosystem services came afterwards a little bit, because they are more difficult to quantify and put a value on it, so to say.
And it, when I was reading it, it sort of struck me, I spend a lot of time in Greece and I absolutely love Greece. And there, the white mulberry has this tradition of, you know, as we know, it's used for the silkworm. And so it was there. But then in villages, you find all the village squares have it, because it gives a sense of community, because it has such big leaves that it gives shade. So community, provisioning, regulating and supporting ecosystems. So it does all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why you see it in every village in Greece.
But that's the future, because both in a small private garden but also in a public greenery, space is a thing we don't have a lot of. So we need to think about multifunctional plantations. So as you said, it's nothing new. We had done it 200 years or even further away in history, but now we have a language to talk about it. But that's a key thing. You just talk about this multifunctional plantation, that tree, if we just have space for two trees in my garden, what they should do. And then you list it, and then suddenly you have a big list of things you want from this tree. And then it's very important to you select the right tree and also place it in the garden on the right specific place. And then hopefully you can tick all the boxes there.
And I remember, I think, reading it in the introduction, actually, it's just the thing of, don't think of a tree as over there in a way. Look up and out, you know, look up, so stand underneath it and look up and look out sort of through it. And it's like they're not a static, they're not like a building. And I love that. I love that sort of idea that they're just obviously so key to our future, but also they give a life enhancement on so many different levels.
Well, Henrik has a lovely, well, so because you always have that lovely way of describing it, Henrik, which is the fact that, you know, the buildings, if you kind of like have an analogy, you know, buildings and architecture are the photographs, it's the photography, it's the still, but the landscape is the movie, the dynamic, yeah, moving part. And I think that's the bit that sometimes can become overwhelming, certainly as I have been coming into the industry and learning things. Oh, my God, how am I going to learn this sort of dynamic movie that's going on? But that's what makes it really exciting. And once you start to get into the movie part, then you can start playing around and see this animation that's going on in front of you. And I think also with the trees, especially when we're thinking about trees in the garden, and I know I've been lucky enough to come down to your home. I know as well that when you select the trees for your orchard, one of the things it's also that we talk about is to look and see what other trees are in your vicinity. Where are the gaps? Because obviously your trees are going to introduce quite a lot of spring nectar because of the blossoms. But then is there a collapse at the end of the season where there's no fruit or no blossom? So that kind of, it starts connecting you then into that wider environment of how your trees within your own personal space are becoming part of the bigger canopy that sits in the urban or the rural environment.
Yeah, completely. Well, I mean, it is just a truly magnificent book. Anyone interested in the outside world will just hugely be rewarded by it. And I wondered if we could end with each of us. I mean, we could talk for hours about this, but if each of us just takes a couple of minutes to describe the importance of a tree or a wood or a collection of trees or whatever, and just describe that and why it means so much to each of us.
Well, I'll start with a tree that was in my life when I was very little. So I lived in Hertfordshire, Greenbelt, you know, small, medium-sized sort of town. And where we lived on a little cul-de-sac where there was a green space, literally sort of some lawn in the front, which us kids could play out. And there was an oak tree that was kind of diagonally opposite to our house. Now, that tree was so significant because that was the tree that I was not allowed to go beyond because my mum then couldn't see because it disappeared me off into the next part of the neighbourhood. It's the tree that we all met at as kids, meet you by the oak tree. It's the tree that we do runouts from. We play Tim Tom Tammy, which is a 70s version of hide and seek, as it were. We would take shade under that tree. It was just, it was there. It was just always there. There was also not too far from us as well, like a little spinney, as opposed to like a full wood. That I was allowed to, if my mum knew where that's where I was going to be off of these other fields, I was allowed to go there, and I would dog walk with her there as well. And the thing is quite, I know this is going to sound really funny, but it's also a tree connection. That's going for a walk in that spinney of woods with my mum with the dog. Now, I was fostered, and so I'm to a white family. So my mum has European hair, and I've got very tight, curly Afro hair. And I used to love listening to the wind go through the trees and seeing my mum's hair move because she used to love the wind in her hair. And this whole thing about the movement of the trees, going on special dog walks. Sometimes she'd let me go out with her in the evening and we'd go for a late evening night walk. And that would all be kind of quite tree focused. So this whole connection to trees, which I think people don't probably stop and think about, that even if you're like now, oh, I don't want a tree in my garden because I'm worried about the root system, etc., go back to when you were younger, or go back to traveling. I used to go travel to into London from Hertfordshire along the M1, and again at that point I was very into my fashion days, but because that drive was my decompression from coming in and out of the city, I used to absolutely watch the trees seasonally, and I was not consciously doing it, but now I go back and I would love it. I just see that tree change. So yeah, those moments when we were writing the book, and I thought, oh my god, I don't know the name of all these trees that Henrik knows, and how am I going to ever learn them? But if you go into the emotion of your connection to trees, then the rest of it comes, I think.
Yeah
When we talk about trees that have been important for you, I will all often come back to some, I think, three or four big old apple trees, because where I grew up in a housing area, there was old gardens which have been, the house was gone, but the old fruit trees are still there. And these four apple trees were the center of our kids, where we meet up after school. Yeah, see you soon. And everybody knew that was the tree. So we were climbing the tree, we have secret clubs in the trees, and in the autumn, we was just eating apples until we fell sick. But they were a very important connection spot, the trees, both up in the tree canopies. And as a researcher, I sometimes ask for some school groups, kindergarten, coming over to Botanic Garden or to the University Arboretum. And I often take the group of children. I ask them to go in different kind of plantations. And it makes me really glad when I see that after 5 minutes, 2/3 of the kids is in the tree canopy, because climbing trees to feel the joy by up being the tree crown, it's amazing. It was amazing for me, and I see that it still is important for the modern kids of today. So climbing trees are important, and fruit trees, which are strong in the woods, also have like a architecture that can have 4-5 kids at once in the tree. That's the perfect tree for me.
Wonderful. I mean, to be honest, my tree was going to be an oak, but because Aretz was an oak, I'm going to choose a beech, which was 3, in fact, trees in my parents' garden when I was very small. And with beeches, they tend to have, just like you said, Henrik, they tend to have this thing of being climbable. They tend to have quite boughs quite low to the ground. So even when you're quite small, I'm a twin, we were able to kind of push each other up to the first bough, and then we could scramble off up into the tree and hide from our parents or our siblings. We were the youngest, and number 4 and 5. And then as I got a bit older, my parents are both gardeners, and my father was a plant collector, and he had the most amazing cyclamen collection, which of course under beech thrived, and in that sort of dry shade they really thrived. And mainly it was cyclamen coom, which flowers in spring and has leaves in autumn, but it was also cyclamen heterofolium, which has flowers in autumn and leaves in spring. But there were a few others that he collected in Crete and things. Anyway, it's I still go back because my mother still lives there. And I always go pretty much first to that tree, because at any time of year, the combination of the spring leaves or the coppery leaves and then the cyclamen carpet underneath, which now extends the size of this room. I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary, and they've done nothing to it. But so I suppose with me, it's trees and plants together. But yeah, I just have great affection for that particular tree.
Well, I love it, because I love I love listening to this. Again, the storytelling, isn't that what is so wonderful about the tree? I mean, obviously in lots of landscapes and things, but I think, of course, because there's history with trees. And I find that when I was listening to both of you, you're there. I'm there with you.
Yes.
There. And I think that that's so wonderful about trees, is the fact that knowing that they've been planted, you know, beforehand. Often the big trees that we see, especially if we're in the Kew Gardens of the world, etc., or any big arboretum, and just having that privilege, really, that we get to see the tree that the other person planted all those years ago. And I think that's just quite an amazing thing. So I think on a very basic level, in terms of being able to plant trees, yes, it's great for future generations. But at the moment, there is an environmental need. I think one thing I would just like to add, Sarah, is the fact that one of the big questions that I get asked, and Henrik, I'm not sure whether you do as well, but will planting trees save the planet? There's a big push at the moment for these numbers that people hear, the trillion tree planting. And in the UK, we've got to get all these millions of trees. And one of the things that is really important is that the numbers are important. But what's more important than the numbers is that they actually need to get to maturity. So planting 3 trillion trees means nothing if none of them actually survive. Planting 10, 100 or 150 trees that get through to maturity are obviously going to do so much better. So I think when people are thinking about their tree selection, as Henrik started to talk about with regards to doing your research, the other part of the tree scenario is making sure that you've got the resource and the capacity to actually look after them, that you are able to do that. Speaking to nurserymen, speaking to specialists if need be, to help you to get them into maturity and to look after the trees that you've got currently. So if you have got quite a few trees in your space, or you know of trees nearby, making sure that you're looking out for dead and disease within them, replacing them. Henrik was in my garden about a month or so ago, and I inherited a massive, great big eucalyptus that was in my tiny 10 meter by 4 meter garden. It's a little bit out of scale. And it's kind of way too close to the studio. So again, Henrik was chatting to me going, well, what are you going to do about succession? Because at some point, that eucalyptus is not going to be able to stay, or your studio's got to go, one or the other. And I'm very conscious that the eucalyptus that I inherited, going back to that list of functions, it's not multifunctional, as there are more trees that can, there are other, so many other trees that could be much more multifunctional than the eucalyptus. So that's something that I've got to look at to start thinking about planting something instead of when that time comes, or I've got eucalyptus has to hand over the baton to the next tree. So yeah, so that's also important, the succession part. So anyway, I just wanted to add that little bit.
And I also think it's really important to end with just when we were chatting a little bit before, this is a come out of lockdown project. And I know we're all sort of slightly tired of hearing that perhaps, but honestly, the detail and the knowledge and the photographs and just the depth of experience that comes out in this book, I honestly just don't think anyone should plant a tree without at least going to the library to get this out, but or asking for it on your present list for next year or whatever, next Christmas. But it is just extraordinary. And it's a life's work that was done in that year of when we were all stuck at home, or those months that we were stuck at home. And I can really see that now. It's to have achieved this is absolutely extraordinary. So thank you both so very much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. And we must also thank lovely Anna Mumford from Filbert Press, who stuck by us in that very difficult time and believed in the book as well, because that was so important to have her behind us. So, and yeah, thank you so much for having us on.
Thanks for listening to Grow Cookie to Range with me and Arit and Henrique. I found that incredibly interesting, chatting to them, and really makes me think differently about gardening in general, but particularly, of course, about trees. Next week, Arthur is joining me again, Arthur Parkinson, and we're going to go through what we feel are our real highlights of our spring and summer range.
You can find more information, photos, and advice sheets on all the plants and recipes we talk about on this podcast by heading to the show notes or at sarahraven.com/podcast.